Johnny Dubs.
Yes, sir.
This is Johnny D.
On the back.
You know what? You know what we're really looking for right now?
I don't.
We're looking for someone to help with content curation, Johnny.
What is that?
That means someone who's like, they're good at social media. They're, you know, kind of have a marketing mind, and they're like, yeah, I would love to go through content and help make like audiograms and posts and other things out of existing content, yeah. Even for video. Where do you think we can find someone like that?
The internet.
How about right here? Guys, if that's you, send me an email at john@johndriver.com, and maybe you can be a part of the Talk About That podcast team. Reach out. Let us know.
We're a family, really, not just a team.
A family.
Today on Talk About That, I give tips on staying in cheap hotels and make a tough choice in a movie theater. Meanwhile, John ponders Old Testament law and the Fifth Amendment and also shaves his face with body wash. Also, a conversation on accountability in politics and why throwing someone's words back at them no longer works anymore. Today's episode is not sponsored by vitamin supplements. Maybe we work, maybe we don't. Just give us $50. Let's get into it.
For all your Monday, January blues, it's Talk About That, Johnny.
Seasonal affective disorder is in the air.
I'm going to tell you something. It is gloomy. And
get yourself some vitamin D, people. Get under a fluorescent, whatever sun lamp you have.
I've been just double fisting cartons of milk. Like, just
what does that do?
The vitamin D, right?
This makes you. Oh, is that not?
Also, I'm lactose intolerant, so.
That's not helping at all.
Yeah, actually, I'm not.
No, I think vitamin D, like, you know, you take it in from sunlight into your skin. That's what
I
mean.
No, I know.
But I'm sure you have very dense bones, except for your ribs, which are still cracked from
Oh, my gosh, guys. I am stove up, which is a southern expression.
Yeah,
I understand.
You are stove up.
But I.
Toe up from the flow up.
I don't know. It's getting worse.
Yeah.
Like, I think I slept on it weird. I slept on the other side last night, and I woke up.
On the other side of the bed or on the other side of your side?
The other side of my side.
Okay.
Like, on the opposite side of the injury. And I woke up still, like, oh, my gosh. Like, if I cough, burp, sneeze, it's like someone's stabbing me in the side.
None of that ever happens.
Ever. I don't do that, yeah.
Don't get COVID. Whew.
Oh, could you imagine? I think, Laura and I theorize, because, you know, Omicron is spreading like...
Yeah, like a virus.
Like a virus. And we have to... We're double vaxxed and boosted, yo.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, there's no... In my mind, there's no chance I haven't had it. Like, at some point...
You think Omicron is already come and gone?
For me, yeah. Yes. Like, I mean, I might have it right now, but I just
We're not careful, I'll say that. Like, we're careful in that we got vaxxed, but we're not careful in our social interactions. We're just like, let's go to restaurants. Let's go to movies. Let's go... Have you gone to movies?
Yeah,
the movies?
Yeah, but nobody.
That's right, you took Say to the movies the other day.
Well, I took the youth group.
How many people were there?
Not many.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the theater was empty, so it was like, I'm not that worried. I think I do pick, like, okay, I'm going to be with these people, and if one of them has it, then I'm going to be exposed. But if I'm in a crowd of strangers, I'll probably still pop a mask on here and there.
Yeah.
Also, if I don't want to be detected. So, because right. I'm wearing beanies right now with the old bald head in the winter. Dude, I could put a mask on with a beanie. And I think about this all the time walking into a store. Like, in any other time in my life's history,
mm-hmm.
someone would think I was coming to rob this place right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, especially because I'm so big and sort of intimidating looking. You know, like, I have the look of one who would rob.
I miss full movie theaters, though.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm the kind of guy who I sit by the end. Because I have to pee like three times during the movie at least.
Yeah.
Because I drink the big Diet Coke. I go, we got a lunch before. I drink the Diet Coke there. Then I get a big Diet Coke because you can't sit through a two-hour movie without a Diet Coke. And you just realize it's such a diuretic by L. Ron Hubbard.
do you remember our live pee stream app idea?
That's right. So
when you get the movie going on your phone.
But that's the thing I've adjusted in my life. It's like I know to sit on the end now because I can't keep getting up. I remember I went to saw a comedy show one time at Polk Auditorium, TPAC.
Yeah.
It was Mike Birbiglia's show, and this was years ago, but I'm sitting in the middle because that's where our tickets were.
Yeah.
And I had to get up so many times, and I remember thinking, like, these people are so annoyed. So when I came back, like, the fourth time, I just whispered to them, they catheterized me this time. We should be all good now. Like, I didn't know what to say.
Did
I was just
laugh?
Like, no.
They didn't even laugh at that?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's sad, but they... I was just trying to be like, look, I'm trying to handle this.
When I'm showing kindness to people in public and they don't reciprocate, it's like we just pulled into the church parking lot. There was a lady walking probably from the apartments next door.
Yeah.
And I waved. and she just turned away. And I was just like, oh, like, I guess we're not gonna, I guess we're doing that.
We're not going to acknowledge my wave.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about moving through, like, especially when the rows are close to the next row and you're trying to get out. There's not a good way to do it because you can't. What you would want to do ideally is the side. Give them my hip. But you can't. It's not enough room. So you either go, here's my butt in your face. Right. Here's my crotch in your face. It is really one or the other. So you go, and I'm thinking, okay, I'll put my butt.
We really do live in a binary world, don't
we? It is. It's a tough
it's
decision.
Only two choices.
Yeah, and they're both bad
yeah.
for strangers.
Yeah.
Or anyone, really. I mean, I don't know if anybody like.
Yeah, I don't. I do. I'm probably going at the side.
Going, you try to go side and then just brush it, against them with your hip?
Well, yeah. It's like a... Well, I'm a...
Well, you're narrower than me, maybe.
I appreciate that. Right now, I'm narrower than very few people. But there, I shuffle awkwardly. Like, I take really little small shuffle penguin
and
steps.
And you're trying not to hit their feet, too, because that's weird. And their feet are sticking way out, usually. They tried to... I stand all the way up if somebody's trying to get by me, because there's no way with my big, long legs. There's not. It's not going to work. So I just stand all the way up and go, it's fine, just go, go.
Are you one of the people that says sorry?
I say sorry
or do you say
all
excuse,
the time.
Or do you say excuse me?
I say sorry.
I wonder if that's a Southern thing, like to replace sorry with excuse me.
Or just be...
Sorry, excuse me, sorry.
Or be overly... I think I'm just that overly self-aware to the point of, like, it cripples me. Like, I apologize for things that are not my fault.
Yeah.
You know, Tim Hawkins and I used to talk about that when he would get on a plane, and he has an assigned seat. And he, but there's somebody sitting in the seat on the far end of the aisle. He needs to get to the window. And he's like, I'm sorry, I need to get to that. He's like, why am I apologizing? I bought the seat.
Right.
It's my seat.
You know the seat's empty next to you. Someone's coming for it.
Yeah.
But it's courtesy, Johnny. It's
it
courtesy.
Is. But it's courtesy. Like, it's interesting to that, that I don't know, whatever that, what is behind it? What's the psychology of the people who say, pardon me, versus the people who say, I'm sorry?
See, I wonder if there is psychology or if it's not just common dialect.
Maybe I'm injecting psychology because that's my brokenness.
Right. Maybe you need there to be a psychological reason.
Yeah.
And the truth is, Johnny, there is no reason for anything. What if there's no reason at all? Let that bounce around in your head for a while like a pinball.
I will say the pandemic, and we talked about this at lunch, but the pandemic has made me gloomier and more introspective than probably as healthy. Like, as far as, like, I think I already tend to overanalyze and overcoach things. Yeah. That's just part of my life as a comedian. You dig in for the minutia. What's the reason? What's the deconstruction of this idea? But I think now it's just like, I'm so ready to just get back to, like, just phoning things in and being like, oh, this is the way the world is. Okay. Like, I feel like I've lost that side of myself.
Well, there was something about being in motion.
It's like inertia keeps you moving. You're like, oh, well, this is just, and you accept things more. Whereas when you have to sit at home for weeks on end, you're just like, wait a minute. You just mull over, like, the nature of things more.
I've had that struggle as I become more, I guess, active in especially social issues and racism and things like that, that there is a sense of, like, an I support organization that helps girls who are being trafficked. And there's, like, this sense of we all need, if we all stay in motion, no one's paying attention to this and no one's doing something.
Yeah.
That's a problem. And the flip side is if you also own that entire problem emotionally, it will crush.
Right.
But then you go, then the flip side of me, the justice part of me goes, yeah, but it's crushing them.
Yeah.
So, like, who cares how I feel about it?
If
this is uncomfortable for me. So, like, there's that. But as a pastor, I've found that you have to also be like, guys, there's this weird place of brokenness that the world is in that God is in the process of redeeming. And that's the whole Advent message, that there is a trust that he's going to make all things right, you know, and we don't know all the ways how, all that he's going to redeem all of that.
Right.
So I can today be active and engaged without also taking on the weight that only God can bear.
Yeah.
And that's a real hard balance for me because we need people who are active.
Yeah.
And bearing one another's burdens is not the same thing as bearing the weight of the world. So how can I find the right amount of weight to bear without the crushing of my soul? And I think the pandemic's, to your point, given me a lot more time to ponder those things. I mean, dude, I did some interview the other day on the Not So Black and White book. And when I retell the story, like, in the pandemic, I turned my back deck into an office in the middle of the winter because my daughter was doing hybrid school inside, and my wife was working in her office, and it was too – we all needed space to work. So I bought and wired into the propane of my house these two huge patio heaters, and I have a fire table, and I bought battery-powered socks, heated socks.
Yeah.
And bundled up there.
God, you've been through so much.
Well, I'm just saying, like, it was...
First of all, I don't think you wire in propane. I think you plumb it in.
It's a hose. Yeah, so I wire in. You know what I meant. I don't know if I said... I didn't even realize I said wire.
Are you
wire.
Sure you want to be working with explosive gases, John?
Hey, attach this wire to this gas.
Somebody hit the power.
Somebody plug it in.
I think my point was... That's a weird day.
Yeah, it is a weird day.
It's a weird day. Like, I got the fingerless gloves on. I'm under heaters in snowstorms, and I've got a stack of books next to me on history and racism. And
yeah.
And I'm going, wow, this is not where I expected to be mid-2019. Like, there was no... New 2019, I look back. I don't know how... Can you remember 2019? Because
barely.
It's like an enchanted year for me.
Uh-huh.
It was a great year for my family. Like, I was super healthy. Laura and I were both doing keto. We went on a cruise that year.
Yeah.
And Sadie was 11. And, like, it was just that time of life where she's not quite a teenager, but she's old enough to do things, you know, and have fun. We went to St. Louis that year for fall break and did all these cool things in St. Louis. We went to Washington, D.C. for a book thing. We spent the week there exploring D.C., We like it was like, oh my gosh, like we did all these things in 2019. And I look back, and you could not have told me, hey, a year from now, you're going to be 25 pounds heavier, covered up with heaters that you wired into your propane, sitting on the
batteries
back deck,
in your socks,
reading about racism.
Yeah.
You know, and like it's just such a weird, it just changed life, at least for that. It hasn't stopped changing life yet, I think.
No,
we'll see if it does at some point.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, about how, like, we've done episodes, and I even said, like, I hate when people say we're in the middle of a pandemic. I'm like, we're not in the middle. I refuse to be in the middle. We're near the end, you know. And that was, like, 6 months ago or something, but I screamed that.
Yeah. I think above all, what we've all dealt with is the powerlessness that the modern age convinces you that you don't have.
Yeah.
You feel like you're in control.
Yeah.
And this proved, like, actually, this entire time, you've not been in control. It's all an illusion.
We're just hurtling through space.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great note.
Yeah. Well, guys, thanks for listening today.
I can't wait.
Comedy category.
Yeah. I'm ready to be on the road again, though. I've got shows coming back finally, and that's great. I'm going to be back to work.
You were really busy there at the end of the year.
Yeah, and then there's a little bit of a break, and now end of January and February are really good, so or bad, depending on whatever. My wife probably is like, well, yeah, the checks are good, and you being gone all the time is bad. I don't know. We're torn in my household.
Yeah.
She knows if I'm home too much, she's like, this is bad for us, isn't it? This is good for us, and it's really bad for us, right?
Yeah.
Should I buy this thing I want to buy or not?
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, but I'm ready to be in a terrible hotel room. Here's what I noticed about hotel rooms, by the way, over the years. I've stayed in some bad hotels. And sometimes you do it because it's like, it's a bargain, whatever. Or you ever do the hot wire thing where you're like, you choose the hotel. And it's like, you just see the price and then they reveal you the hotel after.
I always do Marriott.
You got to understand, like, when you're doing road comedy sometimes, it can be the difference between breaking even or making money.
Sure.
Choosing that hotel. Or, you know, your rental car being $100 more than it should be.
This is why I didn't get into comedy.
Exactly.
This is the only reason.
So you do Hotwire sometimes, and if you don't know about Hotwire, it's one of those sites where you just, like, you just look at the rate, and then at the end of it, they go, here's the hotel you have, and you're like, oh boy,
no.
Dave's Motor Inn or whatever. Yeah. And so I've stayed in some dives, and here's what I've realized. There's a category of hotel where you're afraid of bed bugs. That's the main reason I've started paying a little more. You're like, all right, it's worth $30 more a night to not have bed bugs,
yeah,
or not have the fear of bed bugs. So there's a certain category I just rule out now. But here's my favorite one that you can always tell if you're in a dive hotel. If your shampoo and conditioner is in, like, a sauce packet that you have to tear the corner off, remember those?
Yeah.
You're in a dive hotel.
They didn't even
go with bottles. They're just like, you know what?
Yeah.
These bottles are breaking us down.
Yeah.
How about a ketchup pack? of shampoo for you. you just feel the poverty as you tear the corner. You're like, this is the lowest I've ever felt. Yes. And it's not shampoo in there. It's just a, I don't know what it is. It's soy sauce. It's something. It's awful.
It's honey mustard.
It is. It's not right. Yeah. Your head feels weird. It doesn't lather. It's not proper.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't remember what it felt like to lather your hair.
That's so true. You've not lathered.
So thanks for that.
Not lathered in ages.
Do you take a loofah with you on the road, or you just use the washcloths there?
Loofahs are funny because, like, they at some point came into our consciousness as like, well, I'll have this instead of like a washcloth.
Yeah.
And I used to be like soap just on the body, take the bar of the soap and whatever, and not use a washcloth.
A purist.
But then these loofahs came along, the big scrubbies, and you're like, oh, this is great, because you get that scratchiness. You're like, oh, I'm getting all these dead skin cells off. But the thing is, what they realized, and this is like, they stay in the loofah.
In the loofah.
And they, so your dead skin cells are now rotting inside this loofah. So you're supposed to replace your loofah like a lot, or bleach it, or whatever you do. People don't do it. So you just have this old, gross, skin cell infested thing.
Wow.
But that's the go-to thing for every household now.
Laura, are you listening to this? Because we may be...
Think about what you're doing with your loofah and what's like, you're going, oh, this feels so good because I'm scratching all this. I'm exfoliating means, where's it going?
It's also
being trapped in this windscreen that you just raked across your body.
You're also infoliating your body with old dead skin now.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Bro, that will preach.
Guys, isn't
You've
it?
Got to put away the old things.
Right.
And you got... No, wait. New wine and old dead skins?
Wait,
that's not...
Old dead skins.
I don't know what's happening. But anyway,
change out
your loofah. If you're listening to this and you have an old loofah, I promise you, it's disgusting. It's like your iPhone screen. Didn't they say it's the most disgusting thing in your house is your iPhone screen? It's worse than your toilet seat as far as germs.
I haven't seen my dog's butt.
That's true.
He's pretty gross, but...
Yeah.
Listen, this has been a PSA.
It has.
Like, you have helped
But
people.
I find it interesting that it's taken over, even though we kind of know that a loofah is not... Like, we just think of it as self-cleaning because there's soap on it.
Are you saying that we've been a loofah?
We've been totally a loofah to this whole thing.
Guys, am I right?
But you know what I mean? Like, we've convinced ourselves that soap is self-cleaning, and so this thing that's holding all of this scratched off...
Now, that is a question. If you're using antibacterial something in the loofah, is it not self-cleaning? Is it not sitting there killing bacteria?
Okay, here's the proof of
it. As it lays.
Here's the proof of it. Would you use a loofah in a hotel room that was just left by someone?
Well, no, but I wouldn't use a washcloth or just a bar of soap either. That I might use a bar of soap. But I would wash it off first if it had debris or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not...
It's very, the loofah, you know, again, and the great loofah debates have been raging for decades.
It has. There's no right or wrong.
Whichever side that you light on. So the thing about the loofah, I wrote about this in the Avid endorsement book, is that if you're not careful when you use it, it can absolutely like lacerate your face. Like where the little hangy tab comes off.
Oh, yeah.
There's a piece of plastic in there that is sharper
than
a double-edged sword.
The integrity of the loofah together.
Yes. And occasionally, while it's coming apart, if you're not careful, you'll just like if you had an interview or something that morning and you're washing your face with a loofah, careful. Yeah. You're suddenly scarred.
I don't think I loofah my face.
I loofah my face.
Huh.
It's just because I don't.
That's why you have a glow about you.
I don't.
You really get in there.
I just want a one-stop. Listen, now that I don't have to use shampoo anymore. You know what I'm saying? So I'm a one-stop shop.
I was getting body wash last night, and my wife, we found one, and it was on the men's body wash aisle, which is always a funny, like all the bottles are gray.
Yeah.
Because they know that like men hate bright colors or something. I don't understand the whole point of it. It's like, hey, buy this. It's a rock. Like we're just, you know.
Remember that old commercial that came in? It looks like an oil can.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, yeah.
Like we need, like it's okay to smell good. You're a guy, but like if it smells like lilac, I'm okay with that. Like stop it. But this one literally said charcoal. One of them said sport. One of them said something. One of them said charcoal.
Well, charcoal is an odor neutralizer.
I guess, but it's like, I just feel like charcoal is what I'm trying to get off. Like, you know what I'm saying? What are you?
You coming from grilling.
Exactly. But the one I have had for years that I've gone back to, it has menthol and caffeine, and I'm not making that up.
Well, caffeine actually tightens skin.
I guess.
Yeah,
I'm just in there
use
thinking,
it topically.
Like, yeah, I want a shower, and I also want a cup of Joe and a pack of Cools.
I forget which one it is, and they're obviously not a sponsor, but I do love this marketing ploy. They're like, I don't know what it was, Neutrogena, because right. men have skin too.
Right.
I thought that was good, because men have skin too. It's like, we do kind of act like men are not allowed. We're not allowed to talk about.
Well, we have that thing of what they've done is like 3-in-1. Like, we can use shampoo, conditioner, and body wash, and they're like, it's just a bunch of stuff in a bottle. Just do it.
It's 4-in-1, because you could shave with it, too.
No, you can't.
I shave with it.
You shave with body
wash?
Well,
I have a beard, but I shave my neck and my head. I don't shave my head all the time.
I don't use anything. Unless I'm in the hotel and I have to, like, shave but not shower. But when I'm in the shower at home, I have one of those fogless mirrors, yeah. and I just shave with a razor.
With nothing?
With nothing.
Oh, I mean, I'd be red like the...
Yeah.
Like... Something red.
I don't know, bro. I guess I'm just tougher than you. Is that possible?
I don't think that's probably right. But
anything's possible, John.
Yeah, you're. Well, I hope you get to travel a lot as well.
I'm excited. Great excited to get back into doing what I do. The last show I did was cool, and I was talking about this at this church because I've got this bit I'm working on about how churches put their core values or like scriptures on the walls. Mm-hmm. And like how that's a very like interesting new thing we're doing.
Right.
And, but like Chip and Joanna Gaines convinced us that like writing live, laugh, love on a shelf, then they can charge you $80 for that shelf or whatever.
Right.
You know, or I tell the story of like how my brother has a farmhouse, which is true, but this part isn't true. But I say, my brother bought a shelf that says flour on it and there's a bag of flour on it and it was $80. You know, I was like, what are you doing? But churches do it too, and we have our core values at our church that we used to be on our website and all this stuff. You know, whatever we believe,
it's still on our website.
This is what we believe, but it's not just like this is the scripture we believe. It's like a core value. And churches I've been to church where they put those, stencil them on the wall and stuff, and it's a big thing.
We have them on screens in the front when you come in.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. But I was in a church a couple of years ago, and they had the Ten Commandments throughout their church, just randomly. I was like, all right, whatever, the Ten Commandments. Even though it's kind of like, I always feel weird because I'm like, the New Testament, I feel like kind of completes those and whatever. So it's like, you're still focusing on that. People like, even like in courtrooms, we like, there's like old city, county buildings and city courthouses where like they have the Ten Commandments on the wall or in the front of the building. And you're always like, I'm so conflicted about that. Cause it's like, as a Christian, I should be like, yeah. But then as a New Testament leader, I'm just like, wasn't this all kind of handled in the teachings of Jesus? Mm. Like love your neighbors yourself, love the Lord, you know, like all that. What am I supposed to do with all this? I believe in these laws, but also like, come on.
I'm withholding. Keep going.
Yeah. So anyway, but all that to say is if a church wants to put the Ten Commandments, fine, but it's just interesting. Like they were just scattered throughout the building and the placement was so funny to me. There was one, I swear to you, there was a door going upstairs to an upstairs area and it said youth lounge, a sign on the youth lounge. And then right next to it, it said, thou shalt not kill. And I was like, what happened in the youth lounge? You know, I need the story here.
Oh,
why
wow.
would you choose that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. I actually had...
Thou shalt not bear false witness was right in front of the ladies' restroom, which I thought, that's interesting. There's some gossiping happening in there. But
should not steal outside the secretary's office.
The coffee station.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a very interesting conversation about the Ten Commandments with a staff member one time. And it was like it was hard because I was like, they had posted it somewhere. And I was like, you know, I don't know if we should post that. And it posted it on a wall, not just online or something.
Yeah.
And I think this is an interesting conversation for Christians. It's funny, it's the second time this week I've had this conversation. Like, I was like, hey, you know we're not under the Ten Commandments anymore, right? And I wasn't trying to be snarky. I was like, you know that we believe God's word's inspired and that the Ten Commandments are good and that also, like, we're not being judged by them. Like, we're being judged now by the law of grace if we're in Christ, that he has fulfilled the commandments.
Mm-hmm.
So they're great principles still, and they don't change, and they're good, but is the thing, like getting people to grasp the law of grace is very difficult as it is, so I don't want to be confusing here. So I'm saying we could teach on the Ten Commandments both from a historical standpoint and as great principles that still fit within the way we love our neighbor, which is in the law of Christ, you know. So yes, if I love my neighbor, I won't steal, all those things, but like, if you asked, I think, a lot of Christians today, and maybe listeners are listening going, even now.
Heretics. Finally, well, we've got them on something.
But you go, hey, guys, you know, either the New Testament's accurate when Paul and the writer of Hebrews says that the law, including the Ten Commandments, has been fulfilled in Christ, and we're now free from that. Either you believe that. But the Ten Commandments seem to hold in American folklore for some reason in culture. Like,
yeah.
This sort of hallowed, like you said, there's still – there's a church in East Tennessee. I'll drive by it. They have a chain link, an ugly chain link fence, and the Ten Commandments are posted one by one across, you know. And so it's a very like – I'm not anti-Ten Commandment. I'm not like – each one of these is true and good.
Yeah.
What I am like is if the unbeliever drives by, you realize that that's what they think the entire gospel is about now, in my opinion.
Right. It's amazing how it's weird to even say this. I'm saying it out loud as I'm thinking it, but like the big, huge, like sculptures of Ten Commandments that are in front of courthouse buildings are kind of graven images. It's almost like you're making an idol
out of the first commandment,
the thing itself.
Right? Yeah.
And then you think about those same people are more likely to also be in favor of huge Civil War statues not being taken down because, and it's like, why?
Yeah.
It's a graven image. Like it's a, we're idealizing people.
Yeah.
And we're daring you to say anything bad about this person who's clearly a flawed person. And then we can show you that they committed high crimes and misdemeanors. You go, yeah, but it's history. And well, it's like, okay, well, why are you making this strong defense if it's not a, you know, an idol to you? I just have a hard time with like that hypocrisy, that glitch or whatever.
That's a thing I learned in youth ministry that I think is good for all. It's a filter for all of us in any point in life is when somebody holds something at a high intrinsic value, whether it's an action, an attitude, a thing, an object, that often we will find ourselves saying, well, look, it's not a big deal to me. It's not a big deal to me.
Yeah.
You know? This is not, no, it's not an idol, Johnny. It's not an idol, you know. And my reaction, it was not to be gotcha always, but kids would say that about some habit they're doing, you know. Well, I mean, look, smoking, you know, not a big deal to me or whatever. And I don't have a sin issue with smoking. It'd be more like, hey, dude, you know, you're hurting yourself. Or even bigger, like, hey, they're engaging in sexual things that they shouldn't be engaging in that are obviously leading them down bad relational paths, bad spiritual paths, you know. Dangerous path even for their health and their future. And I'd be like, well, you know, yeah, it's not a big deal. And I'd be like, well, cool. If it's not a big deal, it should be really easy to stop.
Yeah.
Like there's that, oh, if it's not a big deal, then you should have no problem tearing something down. Like the fact that you are defending, like you said, to your point, proves what does bring value to us.
And I'm not saying it's the same thing, the Ten Commandments statues versus the, but I'm just saying it's interesting that the same people would defend those things without seeing the weird, like, crossover in, I don't know, it's hard to see that. It's like a blind spot sometimes.
I agree with, it is a blind spot, and I agree with the viewpoint that, like, basic morality is in question, or like, and that basic morality has been a foundation of much of society for a long time.
100%.
And
much of our laws have been founded based on the Ten Commandments or whatever. You know, we know the murder, but you can find societies in mountaintops and whatever, you know, where they've outlawed XYZ. And so we know that there's an intrinsic morality within us to some degree.
It's what Romans says. I mean, you have this, even if you don't have the law, you have creation and sort of the way of nature. For the most part, there's always exceptions to that where throughout time a society developed into a place where murder was not considered this
right, or
that.
They're cannibalizing or whatever.
Right.
Like John tried to eat me earlier today, and I was like, whoa, we don't do that. And I had to show him in scripture where it was wrong.
Right. And I was like, hey, give me that honey mustard sauce out of the shower.
Exactly. And like, but you're delicious, Johnny. That's what he. I was like, yeah, I get it.
It's like the second time this. In the last, like, I don't know, 10 episodes that cannibalism has come up.
Huh.
I don't know. This is beginning to become an interesting sort of...
Seems like I've got a...
Johnny, maybe you want to talk about something, right? It's not one of the Ten Commandments. Nowhere does it say to not eat your neighbor.
Interesting. Well, it says don't kill, but what if he's already
dead?
And he's near the grill?
You're wearing charcoal.
I'm already wearing charcoal body wash.
And you're like, okay, anyway. But but this idea of, like, I don't want to sound like everybody, there's no, the Ten Commandments don't matter or whatever. Like, basic, I understand that there is even truth. Actual truth is not subjective. Like, it either exists or doesn't. I'm reading a book by John Mark Comer about that, you know. But it's not a gotcha book. Like, this is how it has to be. It's just there is a danger to saying that I can say that truth is in the eye of the beholder. Yeah, like, that's a dangerous place to be for a lot of reasons, but not just morally. Because now we're seeing it right now that you and I were talking at lunch about this, that somebody can say something on camera right now.
Yeah.
And a year later, completely reverse that and do something different. And there was a time in history where
that would be completely disruptive to your career.
Yeah. Like, if you're a politician and you did that, you would pay a price by not getting reelected or even getting censured or getting thrown out of office. And it's, like, common and expected now. And again, I'm going to use an example because geez, Johnny, I'm just going to use it because it's sort of a sensitive subject for me and for everybody. But, like, as a history political science teacher, still the January 6th attacks, like, regardless of the politics or the viewpoint of the election, even though 70 plus courts have said there was nothing wrong with the election, like, it stands for me as a highly, not only significant, but dangerous moment in American history, because as predominantly conservative voters created a noose to hang the conservative vice president. And it's kind of like, if you ever saw the movie The Emperor's New Groove, at the end, like, they're all being turned into different kinds of animals, and one of them gets turned into a cow, and they just stop the whole chase scene, and he goes, I've been turned into a cow. May I go home now? Yes, you may be dismissed. Like, it's just this weird sort of aside. I'm like, everybody, this is a little crazy. Like, did we not think that chanting to kill the vice president and take hostages of the Congress was not maybe a little different, even than we could say, it's just like the violence in the cities around? It's not just like the violence in the cities. I mean, I'm not condoning that either. Right. I'm just saying, like, hey, this is pretty significant. So Mitch McConnell, head of the Republican Party in Congress, also felt that was highly significant, and so made a speech the day of the January 6th attacks, after the fact, since his life was endangered that day, and basically stood up and said, because I watched it live when it happened, he was like, hey, basically, I'm done. We've gone too far. We all know the election was fair, and we all know that what we're doing here to question free and fair elections is dangerous to democracy. Mm-hmm. And he said, this is the most important thing that we've ever voted on since I've been in Congress. So the man said that. A year later, on January 6th, he makes another speech and says that basically his political opponents are making way too big of a deal out of this whole January 6th thing.
Yeah.
And that's where I stop and go, how can both of those things be true?
Right. And just, if you threw the old words in his face, it would just be okay with us now that he said the politically expedient thing now. Like, that, the level of acceptance.
There's no accountability,
Right, the level of acceptance that we have for people getting caught in a gotcha moment and then just being able to, like, weasel out of it. And we just go, well, that's just what people do. You throw their own words back in their face, and then they just go, well, I don't have to answer it. I mean, I think there was one interview that somebody finally got an interview with Trump from, like, 6 years of asking him to interview him, and it was about election fraud. And he hung up on him. Like, he got to a level of questioning where he didn't want to answer the question. He just hung up on him. And we can just do that now. You can just go, no further questions, and you leave. And then, but the level of acceptance people have for that moment on left and right, where you just go, I caught you being a complete weasel, and you waffled on your position here because it was politically expedient, and we're going to call you on it. And people just go, I'm not going to let you call me on that. And you just go, okay, here's my vote anyway. Like, I don't know when that all happened.
I don't know when it happened either. And I'm not, like, vindictive, and I don't want – I just – it's one of those, like, I feel like there has to be some sort of at least answering for it. Mm-hmm. That's sort of what public-facing positions, organizations are sort of about. We – you know, especially if you're elected. Or, again, if a – if a news network's journalist's texts are revealed in a congressional hearing on the same day that they're reporting that this is all just nonsense and not real, but behind the scenes they're texting saying, this needs to stop. This is ruining everything. This is dangerous.
Yeah.
Like the duplicity of like, look.
Then you went on the air that night and said, held cover. You're shown now to be a hypocrite, but it's like, that's okay.
No one cares.
We just go, I guess we're all hypocrites.
I'm just like, what I say is, and maybe this is the Enneagram 6 in me that desires relationships and systems that are safe and trustworthy. I'm like, okay, at some point in time, and like you said, that's left and right. I'm not trying to say it happens on one side, but at some point in time, if you don't repent for that, like I don't need you to be perfect, but I do need you to acknowledge your mistakes. And if you have an ideology of any sort, politically, religiously, otherwise, where your ideology does not include answering for when you don't get things right, I don't expect a human to not get things right. I expect an answer for it.
Or at least say, I changed my mind on this.
Something.
Like, politicians do change their minds sometimes, but it's like, when it's clear that this is about not letting the other side win, that's the hard part where you're just like, this is obviously just about, you know, you just being a weasel here. I have a hard time with that. But
yeah, and I don't, again,
it's not that I've never been a weasel, John. We all know that I have.
Oh, my goodness. You made a whole career out of it.
We could do a whole show just on that.
And I don't think it's even just political for me. I just think that there's a principle there that, and maybe, so yeah, again, I may have said this before, but when our church was sued, and I was, I think it just remains in my mind. Our church was sued by a denomination to take property that wasn't theirs because our property is very valuable. And in the middle of it, I was having a conversation with someone basically off the air, off the record. And with someone who was high up in the organization, not involved in the lawsuit. And the statement was made to me like, yeah, I just, you know, I think you have a really strong justice center. And
it was a negative.
And I was just like, you wanted to just Jesus juke him, just be like, I think God has a really strong.
You know who else has a.
Maybe you heard of the Prince of Peace. But I mean, it was a real.
Yeah.
Like, okay, why do you. Why is everyone not having a strong justice center?
Right, when you say that like it's a negative, when that becomes a pejorative of somebody like, this guy's a real justice guy.
It's like, well, and again.
He's got a real hang up with people doing the right thing. Maybe if we get that out of him, he could be a good minister. Like, what in the world?
And I don't think he meant that. I think what he's saying is, you know, I need an answer for everything. And he's right about that. Like, okay, I may not get a, you know, complete line-by-line retort of every single thing ever done wrong, made right.
Yeah.
There is a moment you have to say, and again, it's Proverbs, good sense makes one slow to anger, and it's his glory to overlook an offense. Like, there is a glory of going, okay, I'm not going to nitpick on this. But that's not the same thing as a lack of resolution or the acceptance of injustice. And to that guy's point, I had felt that same way about people on the issues of, like, racism and other things. Like, oh, they're just going over, you know, but to somebody out there, I was that guy.
Yeah.
Because I just felt that that was a justice thing I didn't need to be involved in.
Right.
And they're just reacting to what's most important to them. But to the one to whom injustice is being committed, it is a, it's again, back to Martin Luther King, it's such a great atrocity for those of us who are not being as affected by injustice to stand idly by and just say, ah, you just care about justice because you really are saying, and I don't.
Right.
Because
and when you're siding with the oppressor, when you do that, there's no sidelines.
No,
you're picking a side by being silent about it.
Well, yeah. Silence is supported.
It always favors the
status
quo. Yeah. It favors the status quo. Whoever's in power is going to be favored by just people going along and getting along.
Well, I mean, the white Christian moderates, what he said, they're more dangerous than the KKK members. What he said in his letter from a Birmingham jail, because they're more devoted to order than to justice. And so things are likely to stay, even though they say they support this ideologically. That's something I'm preaching on Sunday. It's a word play, Johnny, and I'm sorry. One of my word plays is, like, we're talking about grace lived out with people, or it doesn't really matter. And Paul basically says that you could say you have love, you can even give all your money to the poor. If you really don't have love with actual people, then it really doesn't matter. And that love to me is expressed. He's just saying you have to live with people. That's community. And so if you have a theoretical grace,
okay,
it's the heretical grace.
Oh my God.
Theoretical grace is the heretical. Come on, guys. I'm going to put it on the screen. I'm going to let it. You know, the other day I gave you a joke and you were going to take it to a show. This is months ago. And you were going to try it out. I bet you didn't try it out.
Well,
I've
not done a lot of shows since then.
No, it was that night. You were like, I will try that joke tonight because you were warehousing. Wait, warehousing.
Workshopping.
What I do is warehouse.
Warehousing is probably right. That's probably what I did do with it. It's like at the end of Indiana Jones, you know, when they have the Ark of the Covenant in that crate and then he's pushing it and then it's going into a huge warehouse full of crates.
Right.
As if it's never going to be found again.
That was your joke
was in that crate.
But you told me you were going to try it. It was an experiment.
Listen.
It was a social experiment. So now I need you to answer. If I go back and find the clip of you saying you're going to do that and now you're admitting you didn't do it.
Do you remember the joke?
No.
No, me neither.
But the question
it's in the
is,
warehouse.
Are you going to answer for the injustice done to me that you said
you'd
do one thing?
Are you throwing my own words back in my face? Are you comparing this to the January 6th inquiry?
Johnny, this is exactly the same thing. This is you, sir.
You politicized this whole thing, John.
I don't know. It would be interesting to me because I'm such a tell the whole story kind of guy.
Yeah.
And it's not good. It's just the kind of like my brain ain't shaped right. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so, but I always wonder if I could find myself in a place where I would say, I do not recall, Senator. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We always get mad at people that say, but is there ever a reason to say that or plead the fifth on something?
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting that that's in our laws that you can plead the fifth to avoid incriminating yourself. Like, that's a thing that we have built in our system. And I wonder, because it always feels like somebody's being a weasel, but maybe there's a good reason for that rule. I don't know. It feels like there's not a good reason for that rule.
Well, again, those amendments come out. They're called the Bill of Rights. So they are the Democratic addition to a Republican Constitution. Now, I'm not saying Democrat and Republican in the sense of our political parties, okay? But to the original kind of terms, democracy generally denotes something more populist and direct rule of the people, while republicanism denotes a representative government, meaning there's a layer between the people and the decisions being made. So the balance of federalism is the balance between those two things. So the Constitution itself is very Republican. It's very you're gonna vote these people into office. And so the Bill of Rights was added to protect the Democratic, you know, James Madison, you know, and Thomas Jefferson and those guys. You're adding this as a protection for the rights, the human rights in some ways. I don't know if they use that term as much, but of people so that they're not, you know, ran over roughshod by the representative government that the Constitution established. So to that end, yes, you're basically saying justice from a Republican standpoint, again, guys, not political party Republican, political science Republicanism. Yeah. From that viewpoint, you are giving them an out to not have to, I guess it would seem like a human right to, you don't have to ever, the evidence should convict you.
Oh, I see.
Just because you're not going to be able to articulate the best defense, then that should not play against you. You still have the right.
But you shouldn't but a lot of people don't take the stand at all. But I guess if you're called before Congress.
You could just say, I'd take the fifth, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, Congress is, again, I'm not an attorney. I know you're shocked. Going before Congress as a representative already elected and having to testify under oath, I don't think you shouldn't be allowed there because you're not speaking to incriminate yourself.
But that's when you say, I don't recall.
You're basically the representative of Delaware.
I don't recall is basically the same thing as you can be like, look, I do so much. I commit so many high crimes and misdemeanors. Who can keep track of all these?
You want me to specify?
I love a good gotcha moment, though. I think we all do. I think that's why we love TMZ and we love tabloid journalism, and we love some of this stuff that's like invaded and is pervasive in our culture.
Yeah.
But now it's like, maybe that's what did it. Maybe that's why gotchas to politicians don't have the same punch anymore, because we're like, oh yeah, that's like the fifth season of The Real World when so and so, like, we don't, it doesn't have the same. I saw that on the Kardashians when they turn the tables on, like, we're numb to it, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And we need a reality television show like in Congress. Could you imagine just following them around and doing that same thing and like you know, one of them votes the other off the Congress floor. But island.
It's like those moments of like making Colonel Jessup admit he ordered the code red.
Yeah.
Like it's so
satisfying.
It is. And we don't get it. We don't get that. Where the guy was wrong, he's defiantly wrong, but then he admits it, but he still is going to, he's going to jail, but he's still going to be like, but I still did the right thing. But you go, yeah, but we got you. We made you get emotional and you admitted it.
Yeah.
And we won.
It's called, it feels like justice. But again, the fact that, someone's texts are revealed now, all they have to do now is the network.
Yeah. Or you say, my account was hacked or whatever you say.
A network just doesn't cover the story.
Yeah. That's true.
And because they control the news. Because you only listen to one network, you never heard that story. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so.
Do you know about the case of Robert Durst? This is the best gotcha ever. Okay, so Robert Durst was this like New York socialite, kind of a character in the New York real estate scene because he was an heir, but he was kind of like this unethical business guy. But basically goes along, gets along, makes millions of dollars. Very wealthy socialite. And he murdered like two people, like in these random, like weird cases. And it took forever to convict him. And there was a documentary done about it called The Jinx. And it was one of the first like HBO documentaries that was a true crime thing that went viral, mega viral. And the reason it went mega viral is they have his mic on at the end of the document. It's very worth watching. But at the end of the documentary, he's basically like excusing himself. And they keep showing him this evidence that he did these things. And it's not gone to trial yet. And he's not even been, indicted yet. But he goes to excuse himself to go to the bathroom. And while he's in there peeing, he's still got the mic pack on and doesn't realize it. And he kind of burps himself. He's like, and then he goes, killed them all. Of course I did.
No.
Yes.
Way.
And I thought it was made up. I was like, this is just something they've edited. And they got a new trial because of this.
Wow.
And he got convicted eventually. And he just died in jail. Of I don't know what. I think he had COVID maybe. But he's really old now. Yeah. So he got to live this long life. That's the worst thing about cases like that. But that was the best gotcha moment ever. Like this whole documentary, I was like, oh, these true crime, they always think they know new evidence. There's never any new real evidence. They're just kind of like trying to go over the facts and the minutiae of the case. And then at the end of it, he just burps and confesses into a microphone while he's peeing. And you just go, all right, I believe it. Yeah. This is the best documentary ever.
Moral of the story, guys.
Yeah.
Make sure there's not a microphone.
It's a pastor's worst nightmare too.
Oh yeah.
I've
had recurring dreams about it. Yeah. No.
How could you go back? You can't come back from that moment. No. If you take a mic pack as a pastor to the bathroom,
you're done.
Especially if it's a number two situation.
Oh my goodness.
And then you're if your congregation hears that, how could they ever receive from you
they
again?
They can't.
No.
You just move on to the next town.
You go to the next church.
Yeah. So, and guys, we hope that you won't just move on to the next podcast, but you will hang out at our website and maybe check out some old episodes. Where would they go, Johnny?
TalkAboutThatPodcast.com.
Yeah, go check it out, man. You can get archived episodes.
Hundreds.
Yeah, there are hundreds. I had a great comment actually this week. We usually ask permission before we read some of these more personal comments, but we're not going to ask that listener if we can put that next week out.
Here. Oh, we're going to not do it now because you're going to ask?
I'm going to ask, yeah, because it was personal.
A series of waivers?
It was personal stuff shared. So
all right,
try to
fine.
Be, yeah. But you can check out Johnny as well on all the socials and at JohnnyW.com.
Yeah, I found out about new tour dates. I'll be traveling some. John's book. NotSoBlackAndWhiteBook.com. You can find that. Leave a rating. Leave a review. If you've read it, that helps people find it.
Yep. Love to hit 100 reviews before January's up. So you can be a part and help me do that.
100 reviews.
So, yeah. That'd be amazing. So, guys, we appreciate the time you give to us every week. And we'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
There's no better way to start your day than spending time in God's Word and in prayer. Don't know where to start? We have a free daily prayer podcast created to help you do just that. The Your Daily Prayer podcast delivers a thoughtful devotional and timely prayer to you 7 days a week. Gain inspiration, faith, and encouragement with daily messages in 10 minutes or less. To start listening now, search Your Daily Prayer on your favorite podcast app or visit lifeaudio.com.